All right.
Tonight is a special edition of the Bro Show. As usual, Christian and Alan are your bros.
I don't know if we call it special.
Well,
oh shit. The oh shit edition of the Bro Show.
But,
yeah.
We're recording the week of the Houston floods due to tropical storm formerly known as Hurricane Harvey. And one of us, me, is in Houston. So that's why it's special.
Yeah. So, how are things going over there?
Personally, very good, all things considered. We were very blessed to be outside of the really bad areas where there's extreme flooding and evacuations and power outages and things of that sort. Our house, if you just looked at our house and our street, you wouldn't even really know that we were in the middle of this record-breaking catastrophe. But just looking at the news and kind of seeing road closures and hearing all the different messages they have, like, it's weird, they on the news it said 911 calls, the 911 call center is at capacity, so please only call if you're in a true emergency. And it's funny because I thought every emergency was a true emergency, but
no, you know. No, it makes sense. I mean, yeah, there's like life-threatening or not life-threatening.
If you're in imminent danger, then call 911. Because, well,
and they did say that... People will give, like, people will be stupid about using something, like any tool. So 911's a tool, right?
Well, and just... I think it's relative. I wouldn't go so far to say they're stupid, but... any normal situation when I have ankle-deep water in my living room, that's an emergency. But in this case, with the whole city being, you know, like waist-deep, chest-deep, with cars being stranded and, you know, people trapped in their cars, then I guess ankle-deep water in your living room is not so much of an emergency. So that's kind of the message they were putting out.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the better message to put out versus...
Yeah, like if you, I mean, if I go into the ER of a hospital and my leg is broken, to me, it's an emergency. But if the guy behind me is, like, bleeding out from a gunshot wound, then, okay, I guess take care of him first, you know, so.
That's a good question, like, just in general, what circumstances, what do you think is the line for when you would call 911 versus not call 911?
Yeah. Disaster aside. I don't know, for me, it didn't hit that close to home whether or not to call 911. Again, we were blessed to where I never really even had to consider calling 911. But returning to work, that part did kind of become an issue. Like, how capable was I to be at work as opposed to being home with the family? And so there were a few things to consider. You know, one was the nature of my work. You know, I'm not a first responder, I'm not a civil servant, I'm not a member of the media, I'm not a medical in the medical field, so in that respect, if I stay home, it's probably not gonna, I'm not gonna save anybody's life by going to work. And then at home, you know, there's two grandmas in the house. We have my mom and my wife's mom, and then we have two young daughters. So that made it even more important that I should be home instead of being at work. So those are some things to consider. Because there were a lot of, like, volunteers, like an overwhelming, impressive number of volunteers that came out of the woodwork to just help with the rescue efforts and volunteer at shelters and donate food and time and stuff. And that was really impressive. And part of me was, like, on the fence. I'm like... should I be going out there and helping out, or should I be staying home and taking care of my own family? You know, it wasn't to me, it was a clear decision, but it wasn't an easy decision, because how do I know if by me staying home, making sure that my family is not just alive and well but comfortable, how do I know that I'm not sacrificing, you know, the welfare of somebody else because I could be helping them? So that dilemma kind of came up in my own head. We did, when we went to the grocery store, we kind of doubled up on all our groceries, because everything we bought for ourselves, we tried to buy some stuff to donate also. So that was one way we were kind of able to help. But it was this balancing act of how much should I be helping everyone else and how much should I be concerned with my own family, you know? If I separated myself from the family and they're all stressed out, then was I really helping, you know? Or even myself, like, how satisfied would I be if I spent my time doing one thing and not the other? Because unfortunately, you know, there's only one of everyone, and so you gotta pick your time doing something. So those are the kind of things that was running through my mind whenever I was just watching the news and seeing everybody getting rescued and everybody in the shelters and stuff. And it's been pretty revealing, you know, the kind of things that go on, the kind of situations that come out of these devastating situations. So
so kind of taking a little bit of a left turn, I was thinking about the idea of, you know, staying versus evacuating. And so, like, what would it take for you to evacuate there?
Just based on what we've been hearing, they're pretty clear about certain counties. Like, you guys, this is a mandatory evacuation. You really need to get out. Not that they would pull you out of your homes, but, you know, on the news, they would say mandatory evacuation for this county for this reason, whether it was the weather or it was we predict that the water levels are going to rise in your area because of the drainage. So the problem was kind of compound that way. And then another one was if it is a voluntary evacuation, then there's those other factors. Like, if you live in a one-story home, you should probably get out if they have a voluntary evacuation, because you don't have that other option of going upstairs. If you, like, for us, because of our young kids and because of the old ladies that live with us, we're not as able-bodied to withstand some of the severe weather conditions, so we should probably evacuate. There's other things. Oh, tornado warnings. So what's weird was they're like, okay, if it floods, you got to go up, but if there's a tornado warning, you got to go down. We're like, oh, well, what do we do?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. You don't want to be up top when the tornado hits. You definitely want to be underground. So yeah, you're right, though. It's kind of a different response. I never thought about that before. But yeah, I heard somewhere that actually it was like the governor of Texas and like the mayor of Houston were on opposing viewpoints of whether evacuation should happen or not, which is why I asked you. Like, it's not, I don't think it's a straightforward you should do this versus you should do that.
Yeah, well, and
especially if you especially if it were to come down to the point where it is much more of a judgment call.
Yeah, well, the thing with evacuating prematurely, I guess, widespread panic is one. You know, you're going to clog up those roadways and almost trap everyone there because the roads are too crowded because everyone's evacuating. So that's one. Another one is, for the most part, we were safer in our homes than we were in cars out on the road. So if, like, evacuating, if they didn't think they could evacuate everyone, then would you even attempt to evacuate? Because now you're putting yourselves in harm's way just in that little window that you're in your vehicle. So I guess that was another reason to kind of stay home. Something that's coming up recently, looters. Like, whenever you have this evacuation, then it leaves that area like kind of a breeding ground for looters and people that try to take advantage, you know, predators that try to go and vandalize and burglarize and stuff. So, yeah, there are different factors. I mean, I can see both sides of the coin. I'm glad we didn't evacuate, but heck, I can. It's easy for me to say that because, I mean, so far nothing's happened to our house.
You're not in the danger zone, right?
Chest high water with holding two kids and dragging two grandmas and stuff, and plus my wife. You know, not to say that she can just take care of herself. You know, we got to take care of each other. Maybe I would have said, "Hey, how come we didn't evacuate? Why didn't they do something different?" Luckily, I haven't had to be in that situation. But the based on all the interviews that I'm seeing of the people that did have to evacuate, none of them really were saying that. As far, well, not on the air anyway. They were just talking about how grateful they were and the system of volunteers and the communication of everybody seems like it was about as good as can be, and not to say that it was successful, because you know, it's a record-breaking event and no one was prepared for the magnitude of it, especially how fast it happened. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to handle it, and in my mind, just again out of the comfort of this little bubble that we have, where we didn't even lose Wi-Fi, or
that would be a real disaster.
Yeah.
let's not kid ourselves. So, like, what? Yeah. No Wi-Fi? Shit! I'm trapped with all you guys. Evacuate now! Evac. Yeah, evac.
Yeah.
Send out a chopper, quick.
Yeah, I've been texting some of my coworkers, you know, that live in different parts of the city and stuff, and some of the ones that were responding quickly, it was like boredom was basically the biggest problem, was because you can't go anywhere. Everything's closed, and you can't even visit anybody because all the roadways are closed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are best case scenarios. The worst case scenarios were the people that weren't really responding back. You know, I'd say, hey, everything all right? Did you make it out of there right? And like, they wouldn't respond back. I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, okay. So on that note, I don't know if you know this, but on Facebook, there is a feature where you can, it's called Safety Check, and there's a feature where you can actually click a thing to let all your friends on Facebook know you're safe. I don't know if you know about that, but
oh, okay, yeah, I thought I saw some people doing that.
You should do that, is what I'm saying, because everybody was asking me, like, hey, how's your brother doing? I'm like, I don't know, but you know, it's funny because
on Facebook it says he's not there.
Well, the funny thing is, like, it says there are 5 people in the area, right, and only one person marked themselves as safe. And so I look to see who's the one person who marked themselves that safe. And of course, it's my buddy, Chris Davis, who is one of my computer science classmates. So it's like only the nerds know about the technology that can be used to like alert other people and say, oh, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, great. Selfishly, I kind of liked the text messages coming in. Yeah, it kind of gave me an excuse to talk to everybody again. Like, hey, well, I'm fine, but hey, how's it going, man?
I was trying to do the opposite. Like, I was trying to leave you alone, but...
And I guess if I had, like, too many of them, you know, I don't have too many friends or people anyway, so the people that call or text me was a manageable amount.
That's sad.
You're right. If I had, like, 1,000 calls an hour, then maybe I would have to do one of those chicken safe things. But... Sure. You know, if it's like, Alan is safe, all 12 of his friends know.
Thanks, Facebook. Yeah. Really reaching out there. Those 12.
But like the left turn that I would take, in a weird way, it reminded me of last year, around this time. It was this month last year. Mm-hmm. That our oldest daughter, Charlene, had her heart surgery.
Yeah, Charlene. That's right.
Yeah, and we had... a plethora of text messages then too, you know, how's everybody doing, how are you guys, and same thing, you know, whenever the phone would buzz or ring or anything, we were happy to answer it. But however, we were blessed in that regard too, where everything was going really well. We didn't have there wasn't a time where we're like, it's not the right time, I shouldn't answer this, you know. It seemed like it's like God was coordinating our text messages. So I don't know what it was, but we weren't overwhelmed with the amount of attention we were getting for the type of situation that we were in. So luckily, all we had to do was say, we're fine. And I even did a little bit of copy and pasting, not just okay. I didn't want to give everyone the generic okay, but I give the, oh, we're okay. By the way, this is happening, you know, like, oh, hey, we even went to the grocery store today, or hey, at work, we don't have to go to work today because, you know, we can't make it there. So,
yeah,
it's everybody that called and texted, and not just me, but, you know, like, I guess 4 of us between the 2 grandmas and me and my wife. It was kind of nice that everybody was kind of remembering us and paying attention to us and caring, even just, you know, that little bit helps.
Yeah. Well, the context is slightly different because with the it's actually weird because I think maybe the more the situation that I would probably hold my breath more for is for what happened to your daughter last year, like going to that surgery. But there's not like a 24-hour news cycle saying like, here's what it could be like in Houston right now. Just devastation, you know. And so your daughter having that heart surgery, it's not like, you know, like, oh, all these news articles coming up on like heart surgeries all of a sudden. Whoa, what's going on here, you know? Like, another one bites the dust. It's like, whoa, what, you know? The leading cause of something in America. It's like, oh, no. So, and I mean, that becomes a little more, I mean, it's misplaced, right? So, yeah.
Well, yeah, in that regard, it reminds me a little bit of 9/11, because I was in the Navy then.
Right.
And people were calling and stuff, and especially my, you know, our mom, she was calling, I'm seeing on the news that there's, you guys are going to war, are you going to be okay? I'm like, yeah, mom, I'm fine. Like, I'm in the restroom right now, but.
I thought you were thinking about actual 9/11, because for actual 9/11, probably the one who was the biggest concern was mom, because she was in Staten Island.
Yes, I guess, yes.
And then also, all the phone lines were like, totally, like,
that's
not just 911, just all the phone lines, all the cell towers are super loaded, so you couldn't even call, like, it would just be infinite ringing.
Gosh. It should have reminded me of that, but I was being selfish, and it reminded me of my own situation.
You think about after the, like, when you were deployed and stuff in 9/11, right?
Yeah, well, I guess what I meant was the phone calls and the text messages that I got, based on people watching the news, like, and that's why it reminded me of that situation, because the news is going to show, you know, it, like, the worst case scenarios. I mean, it's what they should show.
Yeah.
But what they're not going to show is all of us just with Wi-Fi and stuff, you know.
So I was going to say, maybe we should take this opportunity. Let's tell your story.
Okay.
Like, your story, you know what I mean? Like, you mentioned, for example, like, shooting hoops, right? Like, stuff like that.
So,
like, just, and you can elaborate on shooting hoops, because people might be confused as to what, so I'll let you take it away, but give us the real scoop.
Did I mention shooting hoops?
You were talking about shooting basketball. And you were having an off day, because yesterday, like, even Lola was, like, making shots, making baskets. The whole family was shooting. So, anyways,
you can take
it away. Here's what really happened in Hurricane Harvey, according to Alan.
Yeah, so from the Manalanson household. We get, like, hurricane-type news every year, right? We have a hurricane season here in Southeast Texas. So everyone's like, okay, be aware, watch the weather, yada, 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 prepare, stock up bottles of water and generators and stuff. And we're like, man, that's a lot of over-preparing. But for me, when it hit home was around Thursday or Friday of last week before it started, we started seeing the gas stations, like a lot of cars at the gas stations. And because on the Amber Alert on the freeways, it said, fill up your tanks. You know, there's a tropical depression approaching. And so we're like, okay, we should fill up our tanks, I guess. Fine, let's do it. But I'm going to do it whenever it's not so crowded, because I don't want to wait an hour in this line of cars that are waiting.
Wait, hold on. So you're not willing to wait an hour, but at the same time, and don't lie to me here, do you get your gas at Costco?
Yeah.
So what the hell?
So, well, the point was, I knew that there'd be a time when there wasn't as long of a line, which is like 7 or 8 a.m.,
it's just funny to juxtapose that. Natural disaster, I don't want to wait. Cut 10 cents off gas, I'm in. I'm going to wait.
Another thing was...
Go ahead.
I think our gas tanks were like at 60%. You know, we weren't ready. We weren't really at gas station. I mean, it's not like our gas tanks were empty anyway. Anyway, yeah. So the thought process was we do need to fill up, but let's do it whenever we don't have to wait in this line. So another thing was, my wife, she does a lot of Facebook, like she'll look at the articles and stuff, and a lot of people getting water. And so we go to Costco, and it's like the water was going on sale, like everyone, it was like selling like hotcakes. And then there were even like two or three attendants just distributing bottles of water onto people's carts. And then when you walk around, like, all the Costco carts had, like, two or three cases of water, as if you were required to buy water as you were leaving Costco. So we're like, well, maybe we should get some, too. I mean...
Oh, man.
You know, partly because we're human beings and we're, like, sheep. But partly we're like, okay, maybe there is something to this tropical depression, because everyone seems to be responding to it, you know? So, sure. But still, like, one of the things that was throwing us off was our works, our employers weren't calling us, telling us, don't come to work. So we're like, oh, if they're telling us, if they're not saying that, then I guess we're okay. Mm-hmm. But Saturday evening, this was like 2 days later, like, so this Saturday evening before the storm hit, I guess the night of the first bit of the storm, we see on the news, like, it's be turned into a mm-hmm. hurricane, and it's going to hit land, like, Saturday night, and then it's turned into, like, a Category 4 hurricane, which we haven't had one of those since, like, over a decade, right? We're like, wow, that sounds pretty serious, man. So, but still, I still go to work, and I'm like, maybe I'll write it out until I go home. Well, just by sheer luck, they didn't need me at work. Like, not regarding the weather or anything. Well, so I ended up leaving early. Mm. I was supposed to work like a 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. shift, but I ended up going only 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., like a little four-hour shift, and then coming home. Well, my drive home was really rough. Like, it seemed like the first mm-hmm. bit of the storm was hitting my car, and I got a little Mazda 3, so I'm getting whipped around all over the place like a micro machine, you know? I don't have one of them big high-profile trucks or anything. So I'm like, oh, man.
Which is funny, because they would think, you know, again, Houston, Texas, a lot of trucks, right? And a lot of the stereotype,
Well,
you know?
Not for this guy.
So, but you're not one of those. Okay.
Another juxtaposition that... So,
yeah.
So I'm like, all right, if I could just make it to, you know, there's a gas station nearby our house, then maybe I could ride it out there. Well, at the exit...
Wait. You already filled up for gas, right?
Well, no, not to fill up for gas, but even to go home, because, like, my wife said that the road was flooded by our house.
So you would just stop
just
at a gas station?
Yeah, just to stop, just to pull over somewhere so I could, like, shelter in place in the parking lot.
Oh, like, because of the roof then, like, the roof of the gas station or something.
Or just the parking lot, because the parking lot's a little bit higher than the street level. Just so my car wouldn't flood.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Now I'm just looking
yeah,
for, like,
okay.
somewhere where the rims of my tires weren't underwater, you know?
Yep.
So as I exit the freeway, I'm supposed to turn right to go to our subdivision. Well, turning right is closed. Like, all the cops are forcing us left. I'm like, oh, this ain't good. And I look over to the right, like where I'm supposed to go, and it's like a river. Like, my car is not making it through that.
Oh, shoot.
You know, it's like, it would be like up to my headlights. I'm like, oh my goodness. Number one, good thing they turned me away.
Yeah.
Number two, what the heck am I going to do now? You know, because it's like 9 p.m. and they said that the worst part of the storm is, you know, still ahead of us. So I'm like, man, I hope mm-hmm. something's open to where I could I could just shelter somewhere else. So I ended up under like the Walmart right mm-hmm. next to the house and just kind of walking around, not doing much, but a few of us were. And eventually, I said, you know what? Let me just try to make it home. I guess in the little window that I decided to make the trek, the water level had lowered just enough to where I could make it home. Like, I was still kind of fighting the flood, but it was like going through like a pretty deep puddle or something, and it wasn't impassable. That night though, it was really bad. Like, the storm was really bad to where it was such a blessing that I came home at the time that I did, because I think if I would have had to stay at work the entire 12 hours, I might have got stuck there. Because I work like 35 miles away, and that commute home, I don't think I would have made it, especially not in the little car that I had. So...
Right.
Yeah. That was basically that first day was like 80% of the concern for us. Now, with that said, there were some other concerns for the next few days. But it was weird because they were evolving mm-hmm. concerns. So the first day was, okay, are we going to survive this thing? What's our backup plan? Which, you know, we didn't have much of a backup plan. But the next phase was like, all right, do we have enough to eat? What if the power goes out? You know, milk, like a lot of, there were no stores mm-hmm. open, nothing like that. And then there was this the water had resided, but this weird thing happened, like I saw in the news, where if the whole area is flooded, then there's these rescue boats that can kind of go in there and rescue people and boat them to safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
But whenever the water lowers, now you have like deep, like places where there's a lot of high water, and then you have these dry areas, so the boats can't get past where there's not water there.
Right.
So there were these places where, let's say like some family lives at the end of the street. Well, if there's high water and then there's dry and then there's high water, you can't get a truck is not
you can't get to
a
those
truck
people.
Is not high enough to get through the water, and a boat can't get through the dry area. So essentially, that family would be trapped.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of weird things. Like you almost hope for higher water when you're in that situation. You know.
Right.
But you don't want the higher water if you're like an 18-wheeler stuck in the middle of the road, you know, mm-hmm. and then the water level is rising like up to your windshield and stuff. So, yeah, there are a lot of different situations to where the responders had to adapt accordingly, and then you had volunteers that wanted to lend their services, but then they also had no direction, you know, because there were these like. The city tried to have these command centers to where they tried to coordinate all this stuff, but we were just watching through the news. They were like, over the news, they had press conference after press conference, but if your power's out or if you're out of the house with no TV, then how do you know all this information, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah,
that's kind of, it was kind of like a compound problem, which I've, in my memory, out of the, you know, the milestone disasters that I've seen in my lifetime, I've never seen like a prolonged, evolving situation like this to where there's different things to worry about, like different days, like hurricane.
So were you actually you were actually worried about on Saturday? Was like the dry spot thing?
Well,
or?
On Saturday it was mostly the tornado warnings. There was like it seemed like every 10 minutes there was a new tornado warning all through the night. So, do you sleep upstairs or do you sleep downstairs? Mm-hmm. So the family kind of slept downstairs, but I couldn't really sleep because I'm like, any tornado warning, I'm going to have to, or any, if I see water coming in through the front door or something, I'm going to have to move the family upstairs.
Yeah, right.
But like, what if there's a tornado warning and we're already upstairs or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there's all these different situations that were kind of playing in my mind. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's why when it came to the idea of how to help, my first concern was the best way I can help is to not be in a situation to where I need to be rescued too.
Where you need help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like it wouldn't be good if let's say I took the Mazda out and I tried to go help somebody and then I got stuck and now I'm up out there like needing to be helped too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was the biggest concern, out of many, you know. There was different situations. Like there was this one lady on the news talking about she was just trying to find, like there was her family member was missing because they got evacuated at different times, but then like I guess the rescue boat that got her, they evacuated, the shelter they took her to was different than the shelter they took her daughter to. And, you know, they didn't have phones or anything, so they're like, where is she? I don't know where the daughter is. I was supposed to sit here and wait for her, but she never showed up. So, a lot of situations like that.
Yeah.
People driving the wrong direction on the freeway because they felt like they needed to go somewhere still, but there was a lot of high water on one side, but not on the other side.
Something was closed off?
There's these, they call them flood control reservoirs, and they're... people were wondering if the levees, the dams that were surrounding them, were going to get breached. Like, if there's too much water and they're not strong enough or high enough to contain the water, then they're going to breach, and then that subdivision that's supposed to be protected from that reservoir, then they're going to flood, you know? So...
So wait, so how do you know all this is going on?
The news.
Oh, okay, so hold on, let me stop you. So the news is the news. It's going on. If you want to know what's going on in the news, go watch news. I want to know you, like, yours personal, your what happened to
you. Well, the news was basically all the what-if scenarios that play in my head. Because, yeah, some of this stuff, like...
All right, so the moral is, like, don't watch news,
no,
dude.
No. Well, not unless it affects you.
Unless you're in it, yeah.
If we never watched the news, then maybe I would have never... I would have never filled up my gas tank, or... You know, we would have never been prepared. Because like when we went to the store, we went, like, luckily, there was a grocery store that opened up in our area. They didn't have milk, though. The one thing that we really needed, you know. that everyone really needed was milk. You know, they didn't have milk, they didn't have eggs, they didn't have, they were very low on bottled water. So you do have to kind of watch the news, because it's not all hypothetical, not for them. Like, in some instances, I guess there's little windows where I might as well be in a different state watching the news, where I'm like, oh man, that sucks for them, I'm glad that's not me. On the other hand, though, they'll be like, all right, now we're broadcasting from this other area, and it's like a really flooded situation, and you're like, dude, that's like 3 blocks from the house.
Yeah, yeah. Like, shit.
So we do still have to watch, you know?
Right. Okay, then.
Yeah. And then again, all the people that were, unfortunately, there were a couple of people that were texting just around the area, and we asked how they were doing, and the response wasn't so good. Like, you know, like, some people got flooded, or the house was destroyed, or something, and, like, it sucks, because there's not much you can do. You know, you're like, all right, well, let me know what I can do, is, like, the common response. Or they're like, all right, well, if there's anything I thought you could do, you know, I'd have you do it, but you can't even get to them. You know, it's not like you can deliver, you can have a, hey, let me get you a pizza, man, they make you feel better. Well, the pizza place is closed.
right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so...
That is an odd social sort of a dynamic where we ask how people are doing, but then, like, what if they say they're not doing well? Like, then what do you do?
Again, to bring it back to the, like, last year for the heart surgery, everyone was saying that, right? Like, and it, good on them, you know, well-intended. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me know if you need anything. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, you got any ideas? Like,
meet a doctor?
Yeah.
Can you do open-heart surgery? You know?
Are you offering anything? You
know? No? I could use some of that right now.
So, okay. Right. So, yeah. Let me get back to a couple stories that are closer to home, though. I guess they're not nearly as exciting as on the news, but... school is closed. School was, like, kindergarten, right? Our 5-year-olds in kindergarten. It was closed from last Friday, and it's going to stay closed through next Monday. So that is a total of 11 days of just no school.
Wow.
So the kindergarten teacher sent, like, a little message that said, here's some things you can practice. You know, like, write your name, tie your shoes, learn the colors, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we've been having her try to do that kind of stuff. It's been a combination of entertainment and try to be productive and try to prepare for the situation. One of the things we did was we made this little American Ninja Warrior course in the living room, because, you know, she likes to show American Ninja Warrior, but we had the mattresses down there, and we made a little makeshift, like, all right, you gotta do a forward roll on this mattress, and then you gotta climb around this couch, and you gotta crawl underneath this little IKEA table, and then you gotta go do 2 pull-ups on the doorway, and you gotta go make a basket on this little play school basketball hoop, you know. So we did stuff like that, little
that's
recordings,
cool.
Just kind of keep everybody entertained.
No, that's great.
Yeah. So, you know, those are, like, little memories that we'll have just kind of to ourselves that no one else cares about necessarily. But socially, there is like, a social deprivation that we're experiencing, to where, like, a lot of people are, like, all our coworkers are off work, right? Well, we kind of, usually when we're all off, we kind of want to see each other just to kind of hang out and talk and stuff. But as much as we like each other, we've all been around each other for so long, you know? And sometimes we're kind of all in the same room just watching the news. Now, you know, with the technology era, sometimes one person just kind of goes off into the room just to kind of talk to somebody else on the phone.
It's some cabin fever going on, sounds like.
A little
like.
Bit, yeah, a little bit.
Sure.
And, it's to the point where a couple times we just went around the neighborhood and riding bikes around all through the puddles and stuff. but then as we were riding bikes around the neighborhood, we'd see other families that were just kind of walking around. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, just to get out. I mean, not that it was a life or death situation still, but it was something that we felt like, hey, it is kind of worth the little bit of risk to go out and do something else. You know?
Yeah.
You
still gotta live life, right? Like, so if you're not in the dire situation, well, then you're not in the dire situation, so okay, go try to do stuff.
Yeah, step out of the comfort zone a little bit, you know? Fitness-wise, you know, we're still trying to kind of stay fit. We're every once in a while do a couple squats, a couple of push-ups and stuff like that. It's not routine, of course. Our mom, who lives, like, a couple of blocks away, we've been kind of driving back to her house every once in a while just to get some clean clothes, and maybe some food that's mm-hmm. in her refrigerator that we could use if it's going bad, or maybe some stuff that we're running out of and we can't get it from the grocery store anyway. You know, there's a couple places like yeah. it looked like when we passed by the Waffle House, I don't know if they ever closed.
So that's so funny that you bring that up, because literally on my screen, I remember I'm subscribed to 538 on Twitter, and for those who know 538, they do some interesting like data analysis sort of pieces and stuff like that. But the headline says like a former FEMA head says that if you get there and the Waffle House is closed, that's really bad.
Oh really?
Like in terms of if you get to an air, like if FEMA has to respond to a place, right?
Yeah.
And they go there and they see that Waffle House is closed. They're like, oh, that's
man. Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Yeah, like that's their sign. It's like, yep, we need to do some work.
There's
now.
There's probably
some
truth to that though, because like I know so, in a previous episode I talked about how I used to be like an avid Waffle House customer, and we even had our own waitress that knew our orders and stuff. She told us the same thing. She's like, yeah, no, we never close. We're open for hurricanes and stuff.
Right.
Like, wow. But yeah. in our area, the places that we thought would stay open all the time, the places that we've never seen close is like Walmart, the gas station, mm-hmm. you know, the like 24-hour gas station. Those were closed, but Waffle House was not.
Yeah, so apparently FEMA has, I don't know if it's official, but they have like a Waffle House index.
No way.
That is basically, yeah, it's a measure of how bad a storm is.
Wow.
Because it gives a sense of like the infrastructure around it and stuff, you know. Because like you said, that place supposedly never closes.
Yeah.
So if it's closed, it's oh shoot. Crazy.
But yeah, I think one of the reasons that for me, I guess you know, your question was take the news part out of it and let me know your experience. But for me, because of that
mm-hmm.
social dynamic that happened, the news became part of my experience because it was close to home
oh,
and like
okay.
I kind of. It almost is like I made friends. It's kind of like when you have like the morning radio guys on the way to work, like they kind of become your friends in the morning, you know? You start hearing about stuff that they're going through and you almost think that they're like friends of yours, you know? And that's kind of what happened in this case. I'm like, because there's this like really pretty traffic girl on the news. I'm like, oh, there she is. She's back. I guess her shift was up, you know? She probably clocked out at this time and then now she's back. Look, her dress is all different. And you're like, but where's this girl? Where'd she go? Oh, there she is. She's back. Now, they used to have her in the newsroom, but now she's in the field, you know?
Like, she's getting blown away.
There's this one lady, my wife thinks she's real pretty, and so whenever she's on the screen, then I'm like, hey, mm-hmm. your girl's on, and then she'll put down whatever she's doing, she runs in the room, and we just watch her for a little bit. All right, let me know when she's back on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just different ways to kind of keep your mind intact while all this stuff is going on around you, you know. Some of the stuff that we do is surprising us, while some of it is a little bit expected, you know. That, like, the routine stuff, you know, we're still feeding the kids, still giving them baths and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Bedtime, of course, is kind of a little bit flexed because they're not having to prepare to go to school or anything. But there's like, a couple of things. Like, for example, putting the laundry away, we always say it's because we don't have time because we're never home. It still took us, like, 3 days to put the laundry away, even though we just walked past it, like, 12 times a day the entire time. Yeah.
Forget that.
So that was kind of funny.
Later.
What's another one? Oh, we've had a little bit of time just to kind of watch some DVDs, which we rarely ever get to do anymore. But, hey, mm-hmm. check it out. We got a DVD player. Let's watch a couple DVDs because,
yeah,
you know, there's not. You kind of, when you're in a little cocoon, you're surprised at what you do with the time and how you occupy it.
I was gonna say if you're into the whole like Game of Thrones thing, then that'd be a perfect time to sign up for like a free trial of the HBO Now and just like binge through
actually,
all that.
I think one of my coworkers, I was texting him because he does not even have like a rabbit antenna for his TV, like.
Okay.
I think his TV is strictly for video games and Netflix.
Okay.
To the point where I don't even knew if he realized that we have network TV. But
if you put a rabbit antenna back there,
he's like, "Wow, you can actually watch regular stuff on here." No, but I know for him, he didn't have the news just like on the TV around the clock. So I would imagine for him, probably just binge watching a bunch of stuff or doing a lot of online gaming or something, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, I did see, like, a lot of Facebook posts. Like, some people just occupy their time just thumbing through Facebook, either just kind of for fun, mm-hmm. like, hey, here's some pictures of the stuff that's happening in our area, or I know my wife has spent a lot of time just kind of keeping up with the Facebook page that she's a member of that's like our subdivision specifically, because you can only get so much information on the news. And you're always wondering, does it affect us? Mm-hmm. Does it affect us? Well, some of it did and some of it did not.
Oh, so you guys have a group then? You have a neighborhood? You guys have a neighborhood Facebook group? Yeah, that she's a member of.
It's like our own little police department, cool. our own mayor. Because there's been a lot of false information that's been put out. And then she's like, hey, can somebody confirm if this is true, if this is not true? So, like, that's mm-hmm, one of the reasons mm-hmm. we were alerted to the... there's been people posing as city officials and then robbing them.
Dope.
Like... Yeah, there's been a few cases, and then we saw it on the news, but she first heard about it through that Facebook page where somebody said, hey, if there's a city official that comes to the door and asks and says to open it because they need to check something, don't do it, because mm-hmm. they might be posing as somebody and they're really there to rob you, you know?
Yeah.
And then the news confirmed, like, yeah, they have had cases like that, so that kind of stuff was, you know, it's not all just a waste of time. It's some of it is informative and productive.
No, yeah, well, yeah, I'm... Yeah, you're using Facebook to, you know, keep informed of neighborhood events. You're not stalking ex-girlfriends and stuff like that. You just You can do that on your own time. You don't have to be a storm for that.
Yeah,
so,
I've heard, again, through the news, that this is one of the first, like, huge major natural disasters and recovery efforts in the social media era. So a lot of the information they're getting on where to send the rescue personnel, it's because they're pinging mm-hmm. the social media. Like, that's probably the way we would tell. Like, instead of calling 911,
the agencies are actually using social media. You mean
to respond,
listen to you and respond to people. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and then
that's good.
Yeah, even the if they can't get to let's say a 911 is going to take a while, then they're using social media to group together. They're like, okay, let's get in a group. That way, when the police or the rescue team gets here, we're already together waiting for them, instead of they have to rescue like 12 different locations. Now they have to go to three, you know. So there's stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, social media actually really is doing its part in this whole thing.
That's good.
And most of it's good, you know.
Right.
But yeah, then there are other things that sometimes we're seeing crimes on TV. Like when they're doing their field reporting, they're passing mm-hmm. One of the boats is passing by like a convenience store, and there's people like running in and out of there with stuff. You're like, oh man,
what?
Like, yeah, you're watching a crime happen right in front of your eyes.
Sheesh.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't know.
And then even like to a lesser extent, even like the police barricades that are barricading like a roadway because of high water, then you'll see cars uh-huh. just bypassing the police and like bypassing the barricades. And then
it's the police coming from the background, just be like, hey, and like run and chase something.
Well, we even thought about it. Not we didn't think about doing that, but we thought about it when we were on the road. Like, you know, I was kind of speeding a little bit, or like if I'm waiting at a red light, I was talking to my wife. I said, I could probably just go. Like, I don't think the cops are gonna pull me over and write me a ticket right now. Like, they probably got other stuff to mm-hmm. do.
Yeah.
So
exactly, you're not a threat.
Impressive, I think. Well, I don't know about impressive is the right word, but I give the police a lot of credit for that aspect of it, because they still have to enforce the law, even though they're now doing this other job, this additional job of trying to rescue people and trying to keep everybody informed and trying to mm-hmm. keep everybody from losing their minds. They still have to enforce the law, you know. So
yeah,
that is another right. another thing that happened. Yeah. So I guess the reason I wanted to mention some of the news stories is because I'm not aware. You know, here being in Houston, we have 24-hour news coverage around the clock the whole week. I don't know what the news coverage is like for the rest of the country or the rest of the world. You know.
Oh, it's friggin' horrible. It's that's why I try not to watch it, because it's just like.
But what I'm.
They go to some podunk town.
My question was,
and it's
how,
just like
kind of.
Yeah.
Like how much coverage are you getting about our floods?
For our local news, like, we're still getting it, like, I think pretty regularly, but I'm probably not going to be the most informed person about it, because I'm actively trying to stay away from the news. But whenever I hear about some piece of news, it's some shocking thing, you know, like, it's, and it's, again, it's,
yeah.
There's a mix of that stuff along with the whole, like, news about the recovery effort or, like, people, like, donating or you know, funding things. I think a good sign is that there seems to be actual action happening versus just, like, thoughts and prayers. The whole thoughts and prayers thing kind of gets annoying to me, like, in terms of the social media, you know? Like, oh,
I'm thinking of... Changing your profile picture.
Yeah, stuff. It's like, what, huh? Okay. No, they need some help. Like, give them money and stuff, you know?
change your profile picture to your credit card number.
Yeah, exactly. So that seems neat.
I would imagine for you, maybe you are searching it out. Like, maybe when you log in, you're searching out one or two headlines just because we're here. You know, just because your mom's here and you know we're here. But other than that, I can't really tell. You know, that's why a lot of the news stories that I'm seeing, I don't know if they're getting national attention, because some of them are actually they're actually like really dramatic, and in my mind they should be getting attention. There's people that are getting rescued like live on TV, and there's people that are getting rescued because it's being broadcast, and I'm like, man, that is like amazing stuff. But
that's true. I've seen more of I've seen a few of those stories, and that is cool.
Yeah,
that is cool to see, like, oh yeah, like people, the feel good stories and the people reaching out to helping other people. Yeah. Right. Like even I think I've seen a story of like a news crew stopped filming because they saw a guy stranded somewhere, so they like flagged down a police that was driving by to help them or something, and I was just like, oh, okay. So they were stopping, you know, just reporting about a situation and being like, dude, we need to help. Like, why are we reporting?
One thing that gets me about the news is they're always like, look, I'm standing here at this location, and as you can see, there's water all around me, and I'm thinking, how the hell did you guys get there? Like, if everybody else is getting stranded and drowning, like, how are you guys there?
It's really just a camera and then the green screen and like the weather.
That's just that highway cam. No.
Yeah. And then they're just like they superimpose the person in front.
They got the little clicker over here. You know, the clicker just click through the slides and stuff.
Yeah. Numbers start popping up and stuff like that. Yeah. Then it gets overlaid with a 5-day forecast. Just like, fuck.
Oh, man. No, those guys are great, man. Like, the amount of coordination they had, and also I saw that some of them, because again, I recognize some of the personnel on the channel that we watch, and like they sent anchor people out into the field. They sent news reporters out into the field because I guess, you know, they weren't going to do that part of the news anymore for a while, and they needed more field reporters to go capture this stuff. So, yeah, I thought that'd be cool because, yeah, I know in my job, there's a lot of resistance when you ask someone to do something that's beyond the scope of their regular job.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, man, why don't you go clean the toilet real quick? Like, dude, that ain't my job, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, in this case, and I don't know if, like, you know, behind the cameras, if they drew straws or if they took volunteers, like, hey, I'll go out into the field, or I don't know how that part worked, but I'm like, hey, aren't you usually doing this part of the news? Why are you out there?
Yeah, I wouldn't be so cynical about it, though, because I'm pretty sure, like, all those news people, they know, like, now they know, like, eyes are on them and they're actually making the impact that they want to make. So they're probably more willing to do.
Yeah, I guess certain, so. I could relate to a little bit, just because again, I was a member of the military during 9/11. But even then, we're a bunch of little kids. You know, a bunch of 19, 20-year-old kids. That are like, that ain't my job, man. I mean, in a weird way, when you're in the military, 9/11 is not that different. Like, our job didn't change that much because 9/11 happened. We were still preparing for war, like we always do. Whether or not war was imminent, we were always preparing for war. So media, I guess, is different in that regard, to where their job really changes whenever something like this happens. You know, they're not just clocking in 9 to 5 or whatever, putting their hours in. Right. So if I had to put them on a – I would put them on the same level of importance as kind of the – first responder, the civil servants, you know, the police, fire department. And like, normally I wouldn't. Normally I said, no, those guys, you know, get the kind of the priority, the accolades, the credit. Yeah, the media I felt like did a really good job with, as far as...
Well, I'd say the local media, right? Because, like, for me personally, I don't know about... You think kind of it stretches out to, like, the CNNs of the world and the...
Okay, no, so not necessarily, but I would also add, like, they said there were people from, like, San Antonio News in Houston helping, like...
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, the ones who are covering it by actually being involved, I guess. But that's kind of saying the same thing.
Because there was someone, I forgot the guy's name, but there was like the NBC Nightly News guy. Like, he was here. He was in Houston on location and stuff. But, yeah, I got to admit, mm-hmm. It wasn't as many like one-on-one interviews with the people on the ground level. It was more it was such a broad article because he didn't have the platform to tell the story outside of his little half-hour window.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, I we're giving props to the local... Sorry, I shouldn't say the local news, but I would say the news that is serving the local community.
Yes,
using that as a tool now and not... Really, let's face it, news, with the exception of what's going on here, news is entertainment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When we hear about something going on in, like... You know, Syria, or we hear about something going on, you know, let's say North Korea, or like even for you, let's say, and mostly for me too, like you hear about something going on in DC.
Uh-huh.
It's entertainment. It gives you a reason to, you know, complain, or a reason to, like, cheer, or a reason to, well, rarely a reason to cheer, but like a reason to have something to talk about at the water cooler the next day, you know? But nothing, not really utilitarian.
Right.
You know, whereas now you actually have actionable, like, oh no, those tornado warnings are a real thing.
Sports,
you know?
Right? Let's say like sports, mostly, like 90% of it is water cooler talk. I mean, they don't directly affect us, but we still pay attention as if it does. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the most useful part then is going to be traffic and weather, right?
Yeah.
But like, you don't need to know about traffic and weather for me, in DC.
Yeah.
So they're only going to share with you traffic and weather stuff in DC if there's exceptionally odd traffic or weather.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, both of us coming from LA, you know, like all those, you know, for traffic, it's not really traffic, but all those like police chases and stuff. I mean, those are fun to watch from where we were sitting. I don't know how they are informing,
right.
Like, you know, an audience, unless you're like, ooh, well, that's really close to where I am at on the road right now.
Yeah,
you know?
And that might probably matter now that you have, you know, like, the world of information in your pocket. But back when we were watching car chases on TV, you know, there was no cell phone, there was even no pagers for a while. You weren't watching it to alert you to stay off that road. Yeah. You were just watching it just to watch it.
There was a single time where there was an actual car chase, and it gave us a second, like, a second pause... Of like, should we go or not?
Was it the OJ?
Actually, there's two, but the one that I was thinking of first, OJ Chase, you know, which is the slow speed, right?
Yeah.
So they're closing off like freeways and stuff because he's going slow, right?
Well, we had
right?
friends that saw like news choppers and police cars and even the Bronco, right?
Yeah, exactly. The second thing I was thinking about was the LA riots, 92
Yeah.
That was like, oh, we probably... Not that we're going to wind up in L.A. because we're from the burbs and stuff, but like, oh, we probably should not go to that area. You know, so... And then the extension of that is, maybe we should stay in tonight, right?
Yeah, like,
whatever's going on.
And I don't know. We're also adults now, too. You know, that was back when we were kids and our parents made the decision of whether or not we left the house.
Yeah, so that's true.
Maybe that's what they were thinking. Because from my recollection, our family had our first handgun... Like because of the riots, the LA riots.
Do you think that was why?
I think so.
That's possible. Yeah.
In fact, I have a pretty good memory of, I actually don't know. So here's my memory of that.
Okay.
We were at a coworker of our dad's house, and he said, "Alan, come here." He said, "Look," and he showed it to me, and I kind of looked at it as if it was a live grenade, like it would explode. Like, whoa, man, what the?
Yeah.
Because we're talking what'd you say it was? 92. So. I would guess I was around 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think he just wanted to show me, like, it just, you know, just this is a gun. It's, like, okay, here's, don't respect it, you know. Just kind of wanted me to make me informed of it. I don't know if, like, I don't know how you knew about the gun or that we bought one or that was in this house or, like, I don't know if you remember your first memory of when we didn't have it and when we did have it, or if it was even that much of a memory for you.
Yeah, it wasn't that much of a memory for me. I mean, I know we went to the shooting range a couple of times, so we must have had it then, right? Just by virtue of...
No, that's not the case.
Oh, we didn't have... So those weren't our guns?
No. So the time that I think you're talking about...
Oh.
Are you talking about the shooting range when we actually fired guns? Or are you talking about the shooting range when we were sitting in behind the plexiglass eating M&Ms?
No, when we actually fired guns.
Oh, okay. Because...
I didn't even remember the other time.
Oh, so you don't remember the M&M thing?
No.
I thought I used to talk to you about that. Anyway, so yeah, there was a time when we were like really young, probably like 5 or 6.
Oh.
And you know, our dad went with whoever to this indoor shooting range, and we would just sit kind of in the, what do you call that area, like the gift shop area of the shooting range where you buy the ammo and stuff. We didn't go into the range itself, but
so we didn't need like the ear protection or anything like that because
we were kids, we were still had our hands over our ears. But basically, our dad would take his turn shooting, you know, a clip or whatever, and then he'd come outside with us, and then we would just watch while everybody else shot theirs. And I guess we would probably still watch while dad was shooting his rounds too. But no, none of those guns were ours until that LA Riots thing, and then he showed it to me. And because I think he bought it. I think the story was that guy, the coworker, had one, and he sold it to dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then after that, I guess we had some experience in shooting because we were like getting a little older, and then and then we had like a couple more guns and stuff in the house. But yeah, so it did have a direct effect on us, though, I guess. So that part wasn't, I guess, if I had to pick, the OJ one was more entertainment than the Riots one.
Yeah, I would I could see that. Yeah.
But
I don't know if I'd agree,
if you remember though, because I have this other memory. When OJ, when the verdict came out and he was acquitted, the next day, like, there was a lot of people absent at school, including teachers.
Oh, yeah. That was high school at that point, right?
Maybe for you.
For me, maybe. Yeah. I think you're right. Maybe it was for me.
It was middle school still. But I remember even teachers, like, because they were afraid there was going to be another riot.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Apparently, though, our parents didn't care about that because we still went to school.
Well, we're Asian, so
they're like, "If there's gonna be a riot, you guys got it, dude.
You're going to school." But wait, this is happening. No, you're going to school. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you can't. Wait. You're gonna miss your perfect attendance.
Dude. Exactly. That's what I was thinking. You know, your daughter is like, oh man, she's already missing 11 days of kindergarten. It's like, if you're the stereotypical Asian parent, you'd be like, no, I'm taking her to school. I don't care. You know, there's no teachers there.
She asked me this week. She goes, when am I going back to school? Because we're already getting text messages, me and my wife, about going back to work. Like, hey, when are you guys going back to work? And our daughter, she's like, when am I going back to school? I'm like, she goes, can I go back tomorrow? No. Why not? Because you'll be the only one there. Like, no one's going to be there because it's still closed.
Right. Exactly. And so she already started, though. So she's been going to school for...
She went to school for 3 days.
Oh, that's it.
They closed for the thing. Yeah.
Okay. Because for us...
three, off for 11.
Yeah. It's an awesome schedule. But no, yeah, because my son, he just started... like this week. So if that was the same schedule, then your daughter wouldn't have started work at all.
Right. Yeah, it would just be a wash. They would just postpone her first day of school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. So I think for us, though, the thing we have to deal with is snow days.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and then if there's too many snow days, then you actually end up extending the year.
So I wonder if that's what they would do here.
The school
because,
year, so.
Like, I don't think even our area has done this, not in our lifetime, not in their lifetime, you know, to miss school for 11 days. And we're talking the whole county.
Right.
And basically,
basically, so they may have to do something.
It
depends
on the news that, you know, this county school closed all week. This county school closed all week, and then by coincidence, it's Labor Day next week, which is why it's 11 days instead of 10.
Yeah,
you know,
right? Hey, I'm gonna take a hard left. So we're talking about like school, and we're talking about like school. You know, so school closures or no schools like staying extended for a while, right? And it made me think about, like, well, probably because they want to make sure they cover all the material, which made me think about, like, well, the material that a lot of public schools try to cover is for, like, testing standards type stuff. And a lot of schools have been now, like, the culture of a lot of schools have to do with, like, teaching towards a test so that schools can actually, like, get money, right? Like, it's an interesting business. Like, it's unfortunately not helping our kids at all. So,
well, and it's sometimes it's like a third-party generated test, right? It's not like your teacher grades you on the stuff that they teach you.
Well, it's but like the teacher will know what's on the test, but it's more the fact that, like, that test may not be actually assessing the kid's intelligence. It might just be assessing,
what I
like...
mean is
go ahead.
The test is created not by the teacher or even by the school necessarily. It's by...
Correct.
It's by somebody else that...
Like a state. It could be a state. Yeah. It could be an organization. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so there's this documentary that I watched. It was pretty eye-opening. It's called Race to Nowhere, or The Race to Nowhere. But it had to do with, like, how, man, it's... And they kind of noted it, like, it was ever since, like, No Child Left Behind, which was, like, ironically, like, legislation that was designed to try to help kids, but probably ended up hurting schools more. Because now, like, kids are all about, like, learning or asking, like, is this going to be on the test? Is this going to be on the test? And then there's pressure for teachers also to, like, just be like, we're only going to teach it to you because it's going to be on a test. We actually don't care about you actually learning this stuff.
Right. Or we do, but we don't have enough time to explain everything if we have to get through this material that's going to be on the test.
No. So the teachers are incentivized now in order to get, like, bonus money so that the school can get bonus money. Uh-huh. That a certain percentage of kids, like, pass this test. The more percentage of kids, the more money you get.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's incentivizing them to have a style where they just teach for the test.
Well, and that, I know, but because what I meant was, do they care that you know the material? I think they prefer that you know the material. But if knowing the material is going to mean that you're less likely to pass the test, then maybe they have to choose the latter instead of the former.
Yes, correct. Well, and so they're choosing the latter instead of the former, for the most part. Yeah. So,
Like you said, they're being pressured to, right? They're being incentivized.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, if you want to be able to get the resources to do your job well next year, you have to do this. So, which is kind of crazy. Like, it's kind of messed up. So, anyways, I was a good documentary. I recommend it, but it's interesting because I'm definitely keeping an eye now on, like, you know, all right, what style of teaching is going on in the classroom? And right, our kids are in kindergarten right now, so it's pretty negligible, but over the years, you know, it also creates, like, students that not only are not retaining information, but they're just becoming so disinterested
in
learning.
So, what's your takeaway? Does it make you frustrated? Does it make you kind of want to do something about it? Does it make you, like, oh, yeah?
It's frustrating. Yeah, frustrating is a good word to use because it means that I'm pretty sure that our kids, the quality of education that they're going to get is not the same as the quality of education that we got.
I agree, but I don't think I agree in the same way that you're talking about. Because I think the education they get from the school is probably really limited. But I do think that as a kid learns and grows and develops and matures, there's a world of knowledge out there outside the school, and we as society with the internet, with computers, and just with the amount of data that we have collected and presented, I think that the potential for what they can learn is exponentially greater for what they're interested in. If they can find an interest in something, and it's a big if, because some of them they're like, hey, I don't really care to know it because I can't see how it applies. But if they find an interest in something, there's a world of knowledge right at their fingertips. Where for us, I felt like we were more maybe the level of education in school, the quality of the material was probably a little bit more robust, but we were also more dependent on it, I think. Like take for example, you have a report and it requires like three sources. You have to go to the library and check for the index card, and if it's not there, it's just not there. Maybe go to a different library, or maybe borrow the thing from a friend because they checked it out before you did. It's not like that anymore. You know, I heard something about if you think about any subject, there's some kind of thumb rule that if you read three books on any one subject, that you know more about that subject than like 99% of the population.
I understand.
Yeah.
So now, so hold on. So the flip side of that, right, is because there's much greater access and much lower barriers to that information, kids are, a much higher expectation is placed on the kids to actually use more information. And so the bar is set to a point where, like,
well, you need to do everything now.
Yeah, like now you have to do everything, and so that can have some dire effects on, you know, anything from like self-esteem to like the mental health to, I guess those are the two main things. And so those, the combination of those two things, let's say low self-esteem and like just horrible mental health, will have kids that are like, at best, disinterested in learning. At worst, like, they just feel like they're worthless.
I mean, I see where you're coming from. I guess.
Yeah.
In my mind, I say that's where the parents have a role.
But I think the parents. So, for example, the parents, at least in this documentary, what's interesting is, if let's say that the one example they gave was, like, a lot of parents were noticing that fights were happening in their house, right? A lot of arguments were stemming from homework and, like, the amount of homework that was given in classes. So let's say, like, your child is given, like, 3 hours of homework on average a night. I don't know. I'm just making that number up. But, like, I would think that's a lot. But so, like, as a parent, like, is it your job to, like a parent was saying, you know, some parents will edit their kids' homework. Some parents will do their kids' homework for them, and some parents will not do anything, you know? So what's the parent's job at that point? What is the purpose of the homework, you know? I could see the arguments happening where the kids will probably just tell the parents, like, why do I got to do this, you know? And if the parents are just backing to say, like, well, because it's your job, because you're a kid, and so your job as a kid is to do homework, let's say, right? Well, it might not necessarily be... it might not necessarily be like an over and done case, because maybe the kids are being assigned too much homework, but nobody's gonna advocate for that. Let's say nobody's looking out for that. So those are the sort of things like I would be kind of keeping up with, like, as a parent as well.
I could see the shift happening. I can see the cause and the effect. And what's happening is, you know, with the workload and the curriculum and stuff, it is a challenge. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. How it is a challenge to match the curriculum with what you think a kid should know 10, 20, 30 years in their future, because there's so much that's unknown. So it's a tall task anyway.
Mm-hmm.
As a parent, I think it's really cool to be aware of that dynamic, because we have to know that our generation, like, parents of our generation, when we were students, our parents didn't have the same roles and responsibilities that we do for our kids when they become students. And it's because of the things you're talking about. Like, I'm reminded of another, I didn't get my hands on this documentary, but I've heard about it, and I've heard a synopsis about it. It's called 2 Million Minutes, and it's...
What's it called again?
2 Million Minutes.
2 Million Minutes, yeah. Okay.
And I actually can't find it anywhere. If anybody has that, or can tell me where to get it, then I would love to get my hands on it so I can watch it. But it basically talks about the 4 years of high school, i.e. 4 years is like about 2 million minutes of time. And it says, in those 2 million minutes, what do you do with that time in order to... maximize the possibility that you're going to pursue and achieve success for yourself? Because it's a really important time, 4 years of high school, you know, and you're going to go through a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of things you do with that time, a lot of ways that you think you're making the most out of that time. You still only have 2 million minutes, all of us do, you know, and so when you...
Right.
Spend a year daydreaming, and spend another year chasing tail, and spend another year making money, you know, then, man, it's as much as it sounds like an abundance of time, it's still a limited number of minutes. That's still a finite number of minutes. So, yeah, but it's basically that from the.
I'm trying to let go of this nagging thought in my head that, like, something's off about that number. But.
Oh, as far as the calculation? Here, I'll do it right now.
Yeah.
You got 60 minutes in an hour, right? Times 24 hours in a day, right?
I think it's talking about more than one person. Like, 2 million minutes is probably not one person.
No, times 365 days in a year, right?
Yeah.
So far, I'm at 525,000.
Hold on. Okay. So there's a song. There's a you know that Broadway show Rent.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a song about minutes or something, and it's like.
Oh yeah.
And so I was like, wait a second. Like it wasn't 2 million. Like it was like more than a lifetime. Yeah,
it might not have been 4 years.
I think it was a lifetime.
I just calculated 4 years. 4 years is 2.1 million minutes.
Okay.
They just didn't want to call the documentary 2.1 million, I guess.
No, I think you're right.
Damn, it says it right on the calculator.
It's okay, the song Seasons of Love, and they're talking about 525,600 minutes. But I think that's a year.
Yes.
So if you multiply by 4, then it's 2 million. Okay, sorry. It's freaking stupid memory in my head that I actually wish could just get dislodged.
So you missed my whole story because you were trying to calculate 4.
Yeah, I'm a fuck-up, which is good because I'll just listen to the episode in a month, which is about when we release these things, I guess. And it'll be a nice, like, little, oh, yeah, a hurricane happened.
Well, yeah, you know? I was kind of hoping you would do a special release because of the hurricane.
Oh, okay. If you're going to do it, then I'll do it, sure.
So it's not going to be in a month. Either, like, do a, you know, like a pop-up episode, or you can backdate everything else.
Yeah, I think that's what I'll do. I'll just back everything else up. So, sorry for not paying attention. So... good thing with the power of technology, I can run it back unless you feel like explaining it again, but I'm totally not expecting you to.
I'll do what I do. So. Well, and it's on me to edit it first, right? I have a responsibility. In order for you to broadcast it next, I have to make sure it's edited and off the press.
Yeah,
next.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
But, yeah. Education is a thing. So. Okay, so without further ado then, let's go ahead and... And end things where we're at so that we have a shot of getting this, up. So, I don't know. I know Paul likes to talk about, like, what do you have to next weekend, but you're probably just going to be reined in. So.